world, and I know that you can give me rest. So I cry out with all that I have left. Let me see redemption win. Let me know the struggle end, that you can mend a heart that's frail and torn. I wanna know a song can rise from the ashes of a broken life, and all that's dead inside can be reborn. 'Cause I'm just won't let up, and I know that you can give me rest. So I cry out with all that I have left. Let me see redemption win. Let me know the struggle ends, and you can mend a heart.
Take us where we want to go. Hold me now, touch me now. You're listening to The Hope Show today. I'm so happy that all of you could join me on this Saturday. Today I'm going to be bringing you a special Valentine message. I know it's a little early, but next Saturday will be too late. So before I start the show, I would like to wish all of you a very early and happy Valentine's Day. And I'd also like to remind you that at the end of today's show, approximately the last 30 minutes, I'm going to be opening up the call lines for everybody to call in and share a love story or a poem or give some advice on what my topic's going to be about today. And just call in and visit with Shaziz and I, and it'll be fun. So, anyway, I'd like to go ahead and just wish everybody an early and happy Valentine's Day. And today's message is about returning to intimacy. The first thing that most people think of when they hear the word intimacy is sex. But intimacy is about so much more than just the physical aspects of it. True intimacy is a close, familiar, usually affectionate, personal relationship with another person. It is having a detailed knowledge or deep understanding of someone. It is an act or an expression of serving as a token of familiarity. Intimacy is a quality of being comfortable, completely trusting, confident, respectful, warm, and a sense of complete privacy with another person. So, it is most definitely not all about the physical aspect. In reality, in my opinion, the other things I mentioned are far more important to me. When you can trust another person with your innermost kept secrets and not feel as if you will be rejected for something you have said, when the other person can read your mind and say what it is that you are about to say yourself, when you share those moments of looking across the couch at each other and share an unspoken private joke and start laughing, and no one else can figure out what's so funny, when the other person can sense your moods and want to be there to share in it with you, good or bad, that is true intimacy to me. Intimacy can be strictly physical in some relationships, but the ideal relationships have both key elements, physical and emotional intimacy. Humans have a desire to belong, be loved, and accepted for who they are, and not have to worry about putting on those pretenses with their partner. Love is a key factor for physical and emotional intimate relationships. There are two kinds of love in a relationship. There's the passionate love and companionship love. Companionship love happens when you find yourself wanting to spend more and more time with someone. You find yourself in a sense of mutual commitment to one another, a profound feeling of mutual caring, feeling proud of your mate's accomplishments, and the satisfaction that comes from sharing those goals and perspectives. In contrast, passionate love is marked by infatuation, intense preoccupation with your partner, feelings of wanting to be physical with your partner. As I was doing my research for this week's show, I came across something that I really liked, and I wanted to share it with all of you. Intimacy is the absence of offense created by a mysterious feeling in which no one even knew existed, the absence of a privacy fence. If I said that too fast, I'm going to repeat it again because I really like it. Intimacy is the absence of offense created by a mysterious feeling in which no one even knew existed, the absence of a privacy fence. With today's message, I want to delve into relationships a little bit more than this, though. In the beginning of relationships, most people feel like what my two intro songs were saying. In the beginning stages of new love, you think, nothing is going to change my love for you, and you will still have my heart until the end of time. All I need is my love, my Valentine. In my dreams, I couldn't love you more. We feel this way, with every intent of capturing this love, this moment, and being able to keep it just like this moment for all time. How many of you in my listening audience have felt just this way before? Perhaps you are still in love with the person that you fell in love with, a high school sweetheart or something. But what if you're not? What if something changed over time? What if something went terribly wrong? Can you pinpoint what happened to the relationship? Let's be realistic for a moment. There are always two sides to the relationship, and I find that it is very, very rare that it is all one person's fault. Today I want to talk about a common problem among relationships. What happens when one person is more dominant over another? Folks, you cannot have true intimacy in a relationship when one person is dominant over another. You cannot have true intimacy in a relationship when one person is dominant over another. Why, you might ask? The passive person won't feel safe communicating their true feelings to you. They will generally always be holding something back from you because they don't want to be rejected. It's not always the man who is dominant over the woman in relationships either. This could be very easily, it could go both ways. There are just as high of a percentage of women being dominant over men as vice versa. Whatever your circumstances are, it's no fun if you're the passive one in that relationship. Before I go any further, though, I want to take some time out to share five stages of intimacy that I found in this week's research. Maybe you will see yourself in one or more of these stages. The first stage that I found is infatuation. You think, oh my gosh, I just met the love of my life. He or she is so perfect. I want to marry him or her. I can't believe we have so much in common. I can't wait to see him or her again. Infatuation is the sweet, sugary, syrupy stage of intimacy. It's so wonderful, yet so difficult to resist. Hormones and logic rage out of control. Infatuation makes you feel almost euphoric. The brain, however, cannot biologically maintain the high of infatuation for too long. Your brain will fry, quite literally. Infatuation does take stages of ebb and flow. I'm sorry, folks. I apologize for my sometimes of going in and out of my show today. I have sinuses, and so I'm kind of struggling with that in the back of my throat today. So I apologize for that. Just be patient with me as I struggle through that. But anyway, infatuation does take stages of ebb and flow. Infatuation is pure poetry. Love magnified, like a revisit to the warm womb of security. But eventually, we all must land. Which brings us to our second stage, the landing. The landing from the awesome flight can sometimes be scary. We see things a lot different than initially. The veil of infatuation is lifted, and the 2020 vision of everyday living comes back into focus. Then you begin to think, wow, he or she is psycho. Oh my gosh, he or she really tells the worst jokes I've ever heard. I don't think of my partner every day, all day long anymore. I can go to work and maybe I think about them a couple of times, but they're not on my mind every second of the day. And you begin to wonder if things are okay between you guys. The landing can either be light and sweet, or rocky, bumpy, and hard to come to terms with. But eventually the clock must strike midnight for each of us, and Cinderella must go home, and the gentleman left wondering, where did that girl go? It can all be so bittersweet. But then, that brings us to stage three. Stage three is burying, as in to bury something. This stage happens when all the to-do lists of life come toppling down on the relationship. Before you know it, conversations are focused on things like doing laundry, your boss, the crazy mother-in-law, the neighbors making too much noise, what the cat ate and threw up that day, and so on and so forth. When the burying stage occurs, this thing we call life, begins to encroach on our happily ever after. Burying is not always a bad place to be in a relationship. It's a sign that the relationship is real. It's real, folks. The important thing to remember is to unbury yourself sometimes, not to forget about the relationship and why you fell in love in the first place. The important thing is that you still find time for date night. Perhaps at the very, very, very least, once a month. Two or three times a month is even better. Do something that allows real life to take a break and the gentle, sweet intimacy to resurface in your relationship. And this brings us to stage number four. It's called resurfacing. This is the stage where you turn to your partner and say, "Wow, I forgot just how hot you really are. I forgot how handsome you are, how stunning you are, how much I really, really love you." Resurfacing is a resolution to a relationship. You begin to think along the lines of, "Well, isn't he or she just a bag full of mixed nuts? Oh well, so am I. He sits on the toilet for an hour, reading comic books. But well, I use his razors to dry shave my underarms." And then you start thinking such things as, "Oh, I can't wait for the next date night. I can't believe I have such an awesome person in my life." This resurfacing stage can be triggered by massive problems that the two of you face together and make it through together. It can come after a wow date night. It can come after an especially great night of sex or almost losing the other person in some way. Or after having relationship problems, seeking a great couples therapy, and they've really helped you out. Anything can jolt us awake. Maybe a death in the family, or even a birth. And then, we hit the last stage, love. This is, after all, what it is really all about, right? This is the part of our life when we look across the dinner table, we fight over the remote on the television, we fight over the pillows and the blankets, or we go on a great vacation somewhere and think to ourselves, "Man, you know, I have really got it good. I am truly blessed. I love him or her more than I ever could have imagined." I always thought this was crazy, that someone just pulled a number out of their hat. But I've always heard it said that the first 5 years are the most crucial years to survival in a relationship. I always heard it said that true love blossoms around the 5-year mark in a relationship. But fellow brothers and sisters, I completely understand now just how very true this is. And I want to say right now, you know, I don't know where all of you are at in your relationships. I don't even know if you're in a relationship. But if you're not in a relationship, remember this when you do get in a relationship. If you're already in a relationship and it hasn't been 5 years, but you really love that person in your life, keep trying. You know, if it's not an unhealthy relationship, if it's a relationship where you just argue all the time, you know, maybe each of you are bullheaded or you want your own way, or, you know, if it's not something that's super drastically not healthy, then it's worth the 5-year wait, folks. You know, and it is so true. For the first 5 years of your relationship, you're still getting to know one another. You may think you know that other person. Maybe you've lived with them for that whole 5 years. But let me tell you, those 5 years, you're still in an adjustment period. You are still getting to know one another. You are still getting to know how to negotiate and maneuver around one another and get along with one another. So, fellow brothers and sisters, this is so, so true. You know, if you love that other person and it's rocky and you haven't met that 5-year mark yet, don't be too quick to give up. Just dig your heels in a little harder and talk it over and try to work it out. The rest of your life, if you're lucky enough, blessed enough, to be with that same person for that long, is spent in a rotation of all of these 5 stages that I talked about of intimacy. Sometimes they will be rapid, sometimes the stages will be slow, but they are ever evolving. It is a beautiful, miraculous happening when you can find that person, that one person that you can share all of those stages and seasons with and still find that both of you are happy and in love. And it's not just a dream, folks. It's not. If it is, then I'm living it. And I hope I never wake up. Shaziz and I have been together almost 11 and a half years. The first 2 years were pretty rocky. We had a lot going on. We both had baggage. We were bringing in basically 3 families because we raised his cousin as our son too. And so we had all these mixed families and children and our own baggage, and things were pretty rocky in the beginning. But things started to mellow out. And around the 5-year mark, it was so, so much better. And our relationship keeps getting better and better with each passing year. It doesn't seem like we've been together as long as we have. It seems like only yesterday that our girl set us up on a blind date. That is when you know that you know that you know that what you have is true love. When after all these years, it seems just like yesterday, and life is always fun, always an adventure, no matter how many years you're together. That doesn't mean that you won't ever disagree, but it means that you'll be able to communicate and get over it. Of course, there'll always be little things that come up, little disagreements, but nothing, nothing, nothing that can't be overcome with some good quality communication, respect and consideration of one another. But on the other end of the spectrum, how do you know if you're dating someone that you should really take caution with? How do you know if you're not in a serious relationship right now and you're dating someone, how do you know that if that is the right person for you? How do you know if it's a good match? Folks, if you are dating right now, take caution. This world is not what it used to be 20, 30, 40 years ago. Society is not the same. And just don't move too fast, folks. Get to know that other person really, really well. Take your time. But do you know what the red flags are? I'm going to talk about that after this short break. Go ahead and stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. And because you're going to need to hear this. Every one of you will need to hear this. I'll be right back.
Two hearts can come together, and love can last forever. And now that I have found you, I believe that a miracle has come. When God sends a perfect one, now gone are all my questions about why. Sure of anything in my life. Oh, I wonder what God was thinking when He created me. I wonder if He knew everything I would need, because He made all my dreams come true. When God made you, He must have been thinking about me.
had no one that I could count on. I've been let down so many times. I was tired of hurting, so tired of searching. Till you walked into my life.
Okay, welcome back, everyone. I hope you enjoyed the songs I played on the break. Thank you for joining me today. As you all know, Valentine's Day is coming up in 6 days. For some of you, that is a painful day, a reminder of a love that's lost, or a reminder that you will spend this day, that is for lovers, alone. But for the rest of you, it can be a wonderful day to remind the person you are with how much you love them. Even if you are not currently in a relationship with someone, I am sure that there is someone in your life that you love, and even they need to be reminded. Perhaps your parents, a good friend, a sibling. And it doesn't have to be a passionate kind of love. There are all different kinds of love, folks. I want you to know that this Valentine's Day, wherever you are out there in this world, no matter what your relationship status is or lack thereof, you are not alone this year. You are all in my thoughts and in my prayers from all over the world, folks. I am with you in spirit, and I love each and every one of you from the very depths of my heart. I am reaching out over the radio airwaves right now to give all of you a warm, loving, caring, huge air hug. Squeeze! Today's show is a Valentine's special with a sort of twist on it compared to what you might think I've been talking about. Today's message is returning to intimacy. I've been talking about what intimacy is, the five stages of intimacy, and now I'm going to be talking about how to know the warning signs if you're dating someone that may not be all they appear to be, and to give you some red flags for potential problems in your future. Let's start out with posing the question once again, what is intimacy? It's certainly by no means all about sex. True intimacy is a close, familiar, usually affectionate, personal relationship with another person. It is having a detailed knowledge or deep understanding of someone. It is an act or expression serving as a token of familiarity. Intimacy is a quality of being comfortable, completely trusting, confident, respectful, warm, and having a sense of complete privacy with another human being. In my personal opinion, when you can trust another person with your innermost kept secrets and not feel as if you will be rejected for saying whatever it is that's on your mind, when love is demonstrated with real, unconditional love, when the other person can read your mind and say what it is that you are about to say, when you share those moments of looking across the couch at each other and share that unspoken private joke and start laughing and no one else can figure out what it is that you're laughing about, when that other person can sense your mood no matter what that mood is and they still want to be by your side to share it with you, good or bad, that, my dear friends, is real intimacy. Humans have a desire to belong, to be loved and accepted for who they are, and they don't want to have to worry about putting on pretenses with their partner. But I posed the question before break. What happens if you're already in a relationship and one of you is dominant over the other in some way? There cannot be real intimacy when one is dominant over the other. It doesn't have to be physical. It can be emotionally. That other person is always getting his or her way. Have you ever been in a relationship like that where it's a little lopsided? It's not really balanced. And it seems like that other person is always getting his or her way. They know just what to say to make you step down from your position or your opinion. Maybe they browbeat you, belittle you, manipulate you into feeling bad, wear you down, try to make their opinion and what they want sound more appealing to you, promise you that the next time you can have the next say in whatever's going on. Perhaps they tell you that you're just flat out wrong. I'm going to spend the next little bit of time on my show giving you some warning signs. If you are dating someone and perhaps you just don't know about them, something seems a little off, I want to go ahead and give you some of those warning signs. You know, but always listen to your instincts, you know. Your instincts usually are right. If something feels amiss, it generally is. Sometimes loneliness can blur our vision of someone coming into our lives. Everyone is a mixed bag. You never know what you're going to get. You know, most of the time, especially when you're older, you know, people have been in relationships, they've been around, you know, 30, 40, 50 years, and you know, you're meeting people that are your same age, and everyone at that point later on in life is going to come with baggage, good or bad. And so you need to know the signs, you know, if it's something that is not compatible with you, something that is wrong. You know, one thing you got to keep in mind, I understand that there's two sides to every story, you know, and I understand that it's not all one person's fault. But also try to keep in mind, too, though, that other person, you know, for whatever reason their relationship failed, there's a reason. It may not be their fault. It may be the other person's fault, but it very well could be their fault also. And you need to get to know them very well to know why their past relationships have failed. The kindest person can become irate sometimes, and the meanest of individuals can sometimes be caught throwing some loose change to a homeless person. Sometimes loneliness, desire, want, and impatience can make us react too quickly, leading us to wear rose-colored glasses, that is, seeing the other person in a different light than they really are. How can you detect the difference between someone having a seriously bad day compared to the individual that makes these behaviors a lifestyle? I want to add this before I get started. Please don't blame yourself if during this message you suddenly realize, oh snap, I'm dating a mean person. You know, that happens. Maybe you already knew it. Maybe my message will just make it a reality. Maybe you'll see yourself in that. And you're like, oh snap, that's me. It happens. Believe me, I have actually been there. I was in a relationship with someone like this for a few years. It took me a long time to take those rose-colored glasses off and focus on reality. In the beginning of a relationship, it is very hard to determine what type of individual you are dating. Most relationships start out sweet and polite. Both people are on guard, trying to obtain information about the other person. Both people are generally trying to put their best foot forward. You know that, folks. You've been there, done that, seen it all. But that's the bait to get you interested in wanting to know that person better, in hopes that there will be more dates. Relationships can be wonderful with the right person. However, a relationship with the wrong person can lead to years of heartache, emotional, social damage, and even physical damage. These people can turn a relationship that is supposed to be loving, supporting, and understanding into a nightmare. A nightmare, folks. And I pray to God that if you have not been in a nightmare relationship, that you won't be, that you won't find yourself there in the future. There are a variety of bad choices, and here are a few of the warning signs that I compiled for today's message. Number one, rough treatment of you or your personal property. Number two, someone who makes a very quick attachment to you. Someone with shallow emotions or connections with other people. Typically, within a few weeks, you'll hear them tell you that, oh, you're the love of my life. They want to be with you forever, and they want to marry you right away. You will be showered with gifts, a variety of promises, doted on with attention and nice gestures. This is known as the honeymoon stage, folks. They catch you, and they convince you that they are the best thing ever. But always remember, if it appears to be too good to be true, it generally is. Listen, listen, listen to your gut instinct. It seldom ever fails you. They are overwhelmed with instant commitment, instant love, instant planning for your future. That's number two, quick attachments. Number three, a frightening temper. These individuals have a scary temper. All too soon, the temper will be turned on you. In the beginning, you'll just be merely a witness to violence toward other people. Then they begin throwing things, yelling, cursing, driving too fast, hitting walls, kicking things. That serves to intimidate you. They insist that they are angry with other people and not you. Eventually, though, you will find it directed towards you. And number four, killing your confidence. Your partner will repeatedly put you down. They will constantly correct your mistakes. They will make you feel stupid or feel ugly. There's a constant, gradual chipping away at your confidence and your self-esteem. They make you feel as if you deserve this treatment. You will find yourself walking on eggshells, always fearing you're going to do something wrong. Number five, cutting off support. These individuals will ultimately make you give up your friends and your family to save peace at home. Number six, they will have a mean and sweet cycle. They cycle between these two behaviors. They never take personal responsibility for their own actions. They will tell you that if you hadn't done this, then they wouldn't have been forced to do that. Number seven, breakup panic. The mean person will always panic at the idea of a breakup, unless it is totally their idea, of course. They cry and they plead to give them another chance. They may even threaten suicide. And then they will shower you with the sweet cycle to try to make up for what they've done, until they get you caught in the web, and then the cycle starts all over again. Number eight, they will tell you it's all your fault. Number nine, no outside interests. Your partner will encourage you to drop all of your hobbies, your interests, and involvements with other people. If you have an individual activity, they demand to accompany you. They want total control of your life and who you interact with. Then comes paranoid. Your partner will constantly check up on you, keep track of your every move, want to know who you are with, blow up your phone, doesn't want you to have anything to do with the opposite sex. You will receive the 20 questions. They will track your phone calls, snoop through your purse or your wallet, whatever it takes. 11, sometimes will use public embarrassment to keep you under their thumb. Number 12, they will convince you that you are never quite good enough. Never quite good enough. They tell you just how very lucky you are to have them in your life and that you can't possibly find anyone better than they. Number 13, they think they are entitled to do or say whatever it is that they want and to know everything about you at all times. They constantly make demands of you like they own you. The next one, your friends and family don't like him. That's a biggie, folks. That is a biggie. If your friends and your family don't like him or her that you are dating, you have to ask yourself, why is that? And listen to them. You may not like what they have to say. It may not even be true. But at least do yourself a favor and ask those people why they don't like whoever it is that you're dating. And keep an open mind. Sometimes love is blind. Infatuation is blind. 16. People are always telling you bad stories about him. Well, come on, folks. If multiple people are telling you bad stories about him, not everybody's wrong. Let's face it. You know? I mean, if it was one or two people, you might be able to discount that as a personality problem. But multiple people? No. Don't let that one slide. Because surely, not every single individual out there can be wrong with telling you these bad stories. How about he or she can't be trusted around the opposite sex? They tend to be players. They're not faithful or loyal to the relationship. 18. They have a reputation such as a womanizer, a man-hater. They have a hot temper. They have a reputation for being crazy. And they actually brag about that, folks. Seriously? You're going to brag about that kind of thing? That is seriously messed up. That's a big warning sign. 19. They drive you crazy with the way they behave in the relationship, quite literally. They drive you crazy with their behavior. You're always trying to jump through a hoop, and you can't seem to ever get it right. They just drive you crazy. 20. They discount your feelings and your opinions. Don't ever overlook that in a relationship, because when you're in a relationship, it's about feelings and opinions and compromise and communication and all of that. And if they're not willing to hear your opinion and they don't care how you feel, bail out. Run fast. Quick. Some other things to check out are such things as, how do they treat their family? How do they talk about their family? How do they treat their mother or their father? Their parents, their siblings? How about their ex-partners? How do they treat people in the business industry, like waiters or waitresses? If you see any of these signs in the beginning stages of your relationship, take caution. And don't be afraid to end it if it feels all wrong. And don't be fooled by their persuasiveness. And whatever you do, if you're one of those fix-it kind of people like I am, don't ever get it in your head that you can change them. You know, I think that's what happened with one of my relationships. I thought, you know, they've been down a hard road, they've had a rough life, rough childhood, yada, 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 but if I can just love them enough, if I can just give them enough, if I can just do this enough or that enough, I can change all that. I can fix them. I can make them a better person. Bull. You're lying to yourself. People will not change unless they want to change. You're not going to make them change. They have to want to change. So don't get yourself into that trap either. I'm going to go ahead and take another quick break. And when I come back, I'm going to touch base on people in dominant relationships and what you should do if you find yourself already in one of those.
Amen. body makes the young girl's brown hair turn gray. But honey, I don't care, I ain't in love with your hair. And if it all fell out, well, I'd love you anyway. They say time can play tricks on memory, make people forget things they knew. Well, it's easy to see, it's happening to me. I've already forgotten every woman but you. Oh, darling, I'm gonna love you forever. Forever and ever, amen. As long as old men sit and talk about the weather, as long as old women sit and talk about old men. If you wonder how long I'll be faithful, just listen to how this song ends. I'm gonna love you forever and ever, forever and ever, amen. I'm gonna love you forever and ever, forever and ever, forever and ever, forever and ever.
Love somebody.
everyone. I am so happy you could join me on this Saturday. If you are just tuning in, we've been talking about a number of things, but today's show is called Returning to Intimacy. It's kind of a Valentine's special. I know it's early, but next Saturday will be the day after Valentine's Day, so I wanted to go ahead and do this special this week. I thought it was pretty appropriate for the occasion. So, anyway, I've been playing a lot of love songs during today's show, and at the end of today's show, I invite you to call in and share something on your mind. Tell someone you love them on worldwide radio. Tell everyone a true life love story. Share a poem. Whatever is on your heart with Valentine's Day, go ahead and call in. It's less than a week. It's time to be thinking about those that you love. It's time to reflect on your relationships and rate yourself on the happiness scale. Is your relationship the one you always wanted? Or is there something that needs to be resolved? Perhaps you are living a relationship where one or the other of you is dominant over the other. It doesn't have to be in a physical way. Maybe it's an emotional way. Maybe you always feel as if you are backing down from your thoughts and your opinions. Maybe you think you're saving peace in the family by just keeping your mouth shut and letting your partner have their way. If this is you, there cannot be real intimacy in your relationship. You might be asking why right about now. I am here to tell you, because when one of you feels inferior to the other, then you don't feel safe being completely honest with that someone. Real intimacy is all about trust and how well you know the other person, how well you meet someone else's needs, how well you are at communicating with your loved ones, how respectful you are of someone else's feelings and opinions. Humans have a strong desire to belong, to be loved and accepted for who they are, unconditionally, and not have to worry about putting on pretenses with their partner, or having to worry about having their thoughts, their opinions, and their feelings being rejected when they share those things with their partner. We have talked about the 5 stages of intimacy today, also about the warning signs if you're dating someone, or if you find yourself in a deeply committed relationship with someone who is dominant. I encourage you, if you are just tuning in right now, please go back and listen to this podcast in a few hours once the pod has been uploaded. It is well worth your time. If you think a friend would benefit from today's message, please, please, please pass it on to them. It is so, so important to get this word out. So what if you are in a relationship with a dominant person? What next? Do you feel like it's no longer of any use to try to speak up for yourself anymore? Have you given up on getting them to listen to your opinions, your thoughts, and your feelings? Do you find that it is just easier to let them have their way as opposed to causing a fight to break out? What I want to talk to you about right now is, how do people end up in this type of relationship? And how to make it better, more equal? Mostly, what you have is a failure to communicate. However, in the beginning of a relationship, a man or a woman, whom their mental state isn't healthy to begin with, will seek certain types of people for specific reasons. Dysfunctional people will match up with other dysfunctional people. Your relationships, folks, will only be as normal or as healthy as your own mental state of mind is. I'm going to repeat that again, because there's so much truth in this. Your relationships will only be as healthy as your own mental state of mind. What are some of the causes of being a passive person? What are some of the causes of being a dominant person? It is said that there are many root causes for both tendencies. In a lot of cases of passivity, it may be directly tied to the person being socialized in an environment where it's very difficult or unsafe to express negative emotions. These persons then bottle up their emotions and begin to feel hate or bitterness. This can happen as a child. Perhaps it was the way you were raised. Perhaps you were supposed to be seen and not heard. Perhaps one of your parents was dominant over the other, and that's where the pattern came into play. That was your early example of relationships. Perhaps you learned to be passive later in life because of the environment you found yourself in then. Maybe like me, I was never taught to be a passive person, but in one of the relationships I found myself in, I became a passive person. And that was so unlike me because I'm so independent. And, you know, I'm really good, probably too good, expressing my opinion sometimes. But in this particular case, I found myself backing down. But the relationship I found myself in was both physical and emotional. And so I became passive at that time because I didn't want to be hit because it hurt. And I never knew what kind of mood this person was going to be in. And, you know, it boiled down to bitter arguments, and I just didn't want to deal with that. And so that is how I became a passive person for about 3 years. But it can happen later in life, like with me as an example. So, anyway, perhaps as a child, I'm going to talk about dominant now, dominant personalities, dominant tendencies. Perhaps as a child, the individual was spoiled rotten, given everything they wanted, never having to earn anything. Perhaps they were abused as a child, and now they are simply fulfilling the vicious cycle. Perhaps they were passive as a child, and they're sick and tired of that. They don't want to live like that anymore, and so now they've gone to the extreme opposite. They're finding somebody else who's passive so that they can dominate them this time. Maybe they don't know how to properly communicate with people. Dominant people are selfish, greedy people who want what they want, and that's it, by whatever means it takes to get there. Dominance is so intricate to human relationships that oftentimes we don't even notice that it's happening. Think about this for a moment. Make out a list of 10 people that you know, including family, friends, co-workers, bosses, and think about the relationships that you have with each of those people in your life. Are you dominant or subordinate in your relationship with each of these people you listed? And it can be both, you know. I mean, normally, what is your tendency in life? But then, break that down. And in the different roles that you play, husband, wife, employee, boss, parent, friend, we wear many hats, folks. And with each role that you have, you may go back and forth. You may fluctuate. You know, you may be dominant in this, and you may be subordinate in this, you know. So there's all kinds of ways to look at that. But I bet if you really thought about it for a moment, you would have a clear answer for at least 95% of those roles that you play in those relationships. You would know exactly how you relate to those people. Normally, we don't give that much thought to our daily interactions with people. But the truth is, however, that dominance and being passive, permeates almost every aspect of our everyday social lives. In a dominant romantic relationship, you will find that one of the individuals makes all the decisions, from what show they will watch on television to where they will go on vacation. The passive person will support that dominant person's role, and the cycle continues. If the passive one tries to go against the grain, against the decision, opposes what their partner wants, immediately strife breaks out in that relationship. Most often, people who have dominant tendencies seek out those individuals that they can control. Someone with low self-esteem. And I thought that this was an interesting thing. As I was doing my research, I found out that somewhere between 70 and 80% of all people in this world grew up with a dominant parent. I did. My father was dominant. Maybe that's where, you know, in the beginning of my life, for the first many, many, many years and past relationships, I took a dominant role. But then that changed. You know, I grew up. I wanted to change. I didn't like that part about myself. And then I met my wonderful husband, Shaziz, and we balanced each other out. And it all worked out. But, yeah, 70 to 80%. That's unreal, folks. That's a whole lot of people out there that grew up with a dominant parent. These same individuals will then have children who will repeat that cycle. In a healthy, stable relationship, there should be balance and not discord. It's about sharing equal a life with someone, not being dictated to. You can't force something on someone and yet expect to have real intimacy. It doesn't work that way. Real intimacy is found where there is balance, respect, trust, consideration, kindness, harmony, and good communication skills. A great marriage equals team plus partnership. And team doesn't have an I in it, folks. It's not all about what one person wants all the time. Both people in a relationship need to feel validated and valued. Marriages are the foundation of society, and yet, on a daily basis, we see that crumbling everywhere. This shouldn't be happening, but it is never too late to turn relationships around. Both parties just have to acknowledge the problem areas and want to be able to work them out. One of the potential problems of an unbalanced relationship is that once the children are out of the house, they're all grown up, career goals have been accomplished, the mortgage and the cars are all paid off, the relationship may no longer have a reason to exist. One or the other persons may lose interest or get so fed up with not getting their needs met that they may then seek out another partner. They may believe they have done their duty to society. Sticking with this person and having gotten older and want more from life than what they have, they may move on. They may say enough is enough. Another potential problem is that the dominant person in the relationship may become more dictating, more abusive. The passive person can sometimes benefit just enough, from the unbalanced relationship to compensate for the lack of decisional power and all the losses that are associated with that relationship. Enough to keep them staying on in that relationship. However, everyone has a limit to what they will tolerate. However, you know, like I said, you gotta look at that, you know, you gotta think about that. If you are in that relationship right now, and maybe you've been in a relationship like that for many years, what's your limit? What are you willing to tolerate? When are you going to start standing up for yourself? Sometimes the amount of abuse that one can tolerate will skyrocket to the point that the benefit in the relationship simply is no longer worth it in the walk out. Maybe you haven't reached that limit yet. Maybe you are already there and beyond. Maybe you are one of the fortunate ones that don't have this issue in the first place. If you are one of those blessed relationships, praise God. Praise God. Pat yourself on the back. The course of true love never has run smooth. But it certainly doesn't mean that things cannot be balanced out in the favor of both partners either. If you're in a relationship with someone who is dominant over you in any way, my suggestion is that before you get any further or before the relationship gets any further out of hand. But you lovingly insist on respect from that person. By all means, do not go bulldozing up to this person in your relationship and say, I demand respect, you know, you aren't going to treat me like this no more. I'm done. No, I'm not saying that. Don't approach your partner in that way. You will not get results, I guarantee you. But lovingly approach your partner and insist on respect. Lovingly, it's all about presentation. Lovingly state your opinion, but keep asserting yourself. Put your foot down, but don't ever do evil with evil. And don't you ever just roll over and play dead. Yes, there may be some heated arguments, but the more you stand up for yourself, one of two things is going to happen. There will be a breaking point and someone leaves, or the dominant person will come around to treating you in a more respectful way. If you see any signs of physical abuse becoming a problem, if you stand up for yourself, then and this is what happens to you, or things just keep escalating and escalating out of control, then you might want to consider getting out of that relationship. Don't stick around to see if it's going to get better. Don't back down just because you're afraid. Don't let the other person try to make it out that it's all your fault. Folks, we teach others how to treat us. The time to stand up for yourself and assert yourself is when you first meet someone. Not 2 months down the road, not a year, 2 years, 4 years, 10 years down the road. That is not the time. I mean, yeah, go ahead and assert yourself, but that should have been established right from the very beginning of your relationship. When you first meet someone, that is when you start teaching people how to treat you. As you get to know one another better, the other person will come to realize that they cannot get one over on you all the time. If you set boundaries of what is acceptable treatment from the very beginning, there is no question down the road. If you let someone dominate you and do nothing about it, then you have silently told the other person that it is okay to treat you like a doormat, and they will. But if right from the very beginning you are honest, open, upfront, assertive, firm, then that other person will also know that you have boundaries. You teach others how to treat you. Keep that in mind the next time something happens in your life. I want to share some last ideas with you about returning to intimacy. Dominant and passive, those are very real problems in a relationship. But it could be a whole slew of other issues as well. Withdrawal is a slippery slope, and you can get there before you even know it. But it takes quite a bit of effort to climb back up that hill. One of you can try to pull the other back up the hill, but it is so much easier when you're helping each other to get back up that slope, when you work together. I want to give you some final thoughts on and trying to help, you know, help one another. Remember that your partners will not always experience the same state of mind at the same exact time as you. One partner may disrupt the other's state of intimacy by falling or failing to meet an emotional need of the other one. One is thought to be thoughtless. The offended one begins to complain and nag and may even try to start a fight. In this case, maybe the person who supposedly offended the other one could instead of being defensive, make a new effort to restore intimacy by tossing out that olive branch to the other person. Whether you believe you're wrong or not, a simple apology might be just the olive branch. Try to make up for the thoughtless deed. Resist any and all advice given to you by friends and family. Resist any and all advice. They are not in your relationship. They are not a part of your relationship. Outsiders will encourage you to keep fighting about whatever it is instead of trying to negotiate intelligently and peacefully. It's important to remember that withdrawing from the relationship, it may seem like the peaceful way to handle things, but it's actually a way of shutting down a process. It's a shutting down process in your relationship. By facing your differences, even if that means returning to the conflict, it restores hope in your relationship that the relationship is worth fighting for. By coming out of that withdrawal stage, you're lowering your emotional defense and you're taking that risk to get close to each other again. While demanding and arguing is instinctive in relationships, it does take two to argue. It's possible to defuse arguments. If one of the partners makes an effort to avoid making demands and making judgmental statements and tries to be thoughtful and validating, trying to meet the other person's need, the other person will usually calm down and try to do the same thing. They'll try to meet you halfway. Once they see the other's caring efforts, then you can rebuild your love bank accounts and re-enter into intimacy. Another way of returning to intimacy is trying to set a good example in front of your partner. If your partner sees that you're trying to meet their need first, then it just stands to reason that if you're trying to meet someone's need first, then your needs come second, and your partner's going to notice that. When you do this, your partner will be encouraged to reciprocate the favor. When two people are in an argument, intimacy is the last thing on your mind. But meeting someone else's emotional needs, you know, that may seem unnatural and unfair when you're in the middle of an argument, but you have to try it. It's for your relationship. When you do, the love banks are once again restored. Then your love for one another is once again triggered, and you can get back to the intimacy. When you are sharing intimacy, doing things for one another will seem almost effortless. Sometimes you just have to agree to disagree. A resolution can't always be found. But relationships take a lot of respect, a lot of compromise. Love, empathy, communication, kindness, thoughtfulness, consideration, even eating some crow sometimes. And lots of grace mixed in with apologies. Remember that you are not perfect either. No one is. You know, maybe just each and every day, find one thing that you can think of that your partner would really like. For the woman, get up early and make your man some breakfast, a cup of coffee. Surprise him. For a man, do the dishes for your woman. Throw in a load of laundry. For the woman, treat your man to a sack lunch and put something extra special in there for him, a surprise. Maybe his favorite cookies, something. Maybe a love note. For the man, buy your woman some flowers. Pick some flowers along the side of the road if you can't afford to buy a flower. But folks, each and every day, go out of your way to think of something that you can do for your partner. And that will keep the intimacy alive. I'm going to go ahead and share a special Valentine poem that I found. It's called A Special World. A special world for you and me, a special bond one cannot see. It wraps us up in it like a cocoon. It holds us fiercely in its womb. Its fingers spread like fine spun gold, gently nestling us to the fold. Like silken thread, it holds us fast, bonds like this are meant to last. And though at times a thread may break, a new one forms in its wake. To bind us closer and keep us strong in a special world where we belong. And that was a poem by Shayla Lennon. I'm going to go ahead and take another really quick short break. I'm only going to play one more song before I open call-in lines for my listening audience. So please call in. Share with me what's on your mind. Share another poem. Share a sappy love story. Give some advice. Tell someone you love them. Or happy Valentine's Day worldwide. But be thinking about it so that when we come back, you can call in and tell us all about it. Hold on just a moment, folks. That's the wrong song.
Sorry about that, folks.
We're just going to go ahead and go into the straight call-in, folks, because it's almost time for us to go off air. So go ahead and make your call-ins right now, and we'll catch up to the song a little bit later. So I want to apologize for that. Welcome back to the Hope Show. The lines are now open to call in and visit with my husband and I. Wish that special person a happy Valentine's Day early. Proclaim your life for the world to hear. Call in and share a love poem. Share with us that sappy love story. Give some advice to people in relationships. Whatever's on your heart. We have our first caller, Muddy Mudman's, joining us today. Hello there, sir. Welcome.
We just lost the call.
It appears that we have lost Muddy Mudman. Wow. What is up with all this? Call us back in there, Muddy Mudman. In the meantime, Shaziz, what do you want to share to the world today? Oh, here he is. He's back. Welcome, sir. Thanks for joining us today.
Whoops, I better cut the radio off over here.
Man, we're a fine team today, aren't we?
Oh, yeah. Getting everything coordinated half the time. Well, all I had to do was hit the auxiliary button. That would have been smart. My computer's figured weird for doing the shows.
Yeah.
Yeah, what was fun is I built my pop-pop boat during the shows, and I was messing with the super glue. I got both hands glued on there. Had 13 seconds of dead air. That helped out a lot.
I'm sorry, that's not funny, but it is funny.
lost a little skin for the desperation there.
Good thing you have backup.
Cooking. I do the cooking, I do the cleaning, I do the washing the clothes, the drying, the folding. And I let my wife have them, she puts them away.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I like that. It's very nice, and I'm sure she appreciates that a great deal.
She works hard.
Yeah,
she goes to Walmart for a part-time and then does papers at night. Man, I tell you what, when I did the papers, it seemed like staying up and throwing them papers at night and have to... As many as you have to roll and throw and get it all done in 4 hours, you know, the brain uses 90% of the body's energy, and exactly. You know, you're constantly going as fast as you can on your brain, and it wears you out. And then she gets home, she wants to crash as soon as she gets home.
Yeah.
Usually try to get her some breakfast and put her to bed, snuggle her in there, scratch her back,
kiss
the deer. And then I pick on her for a few minutes till her caterpillars start wiggling. I get a good smile out of her, and I leave her alone. She passes right out.
Aw, you're such a sweetie.
Yeah, and then I have to make sure she gets up when it's time to get up.
Well, that sounds like a good man, a good relationship.
Yeah, I guess. I didn't realize that. Sometimes, now I know why she loves me.
Well, I believe the key to any relationship is making your significant other the center of your universe. And if you do that and you just follow that little idea, then it seems to work out for me all right.
Yeah. Well, I ain't the best at all them things I do.
Hey, at least you're attempting it. That's great. That's 95% more than what some of the other people out there in this world do.
It's not necessarily having to be the best. It's about making the effort, you
That's
know.
Right.
That's the big point.
That's right. It's about showing her that you love her and that you care and that you're trying, that you appreciate her, that you respect her hard work, and so that's what it's all about.
Yeah, I like the, no, when it comes down to filling out paperwork or something like that, that's her job.
Yeah.
That's her job. I ain't trying to find the right pair of glasses so I can see and then think back, oh, when was this? She's got all them dates. She remembers numbers. She remembers telephone numbers from, like, 10 years ago.
Oh, goodness.
So.
My daughter's like that. She has a photogenic mind. She can see a number and it's there.
Yeah, so that's, paperwork is hers. even though I ran the taxi cab business and did all that stuff, I said, when it come down to all the numbers, I said, here you go, baby. I'd figure out how much is coming in, how much is going out, and all that kind of stuff. And I was picky about finding zero for that day. I needed to know what number, whatever, you know, I needed to know exactly how much we had the day before and how much we have today, right down to the penny. And then, you know, that was just one of the things I did. I do that. Everything else was handled by her.
Well, you know, marriage relationships, they are a partnership. And sometimes there's things that, you know, both of you are good at different things. And sometimes there's things that maybe one of you don't particularly like to do and the other one doesn't mind. For instance, like washing dishes, you know. I would prefer to wash dishes. My husband prefers to dry dishes, you know. And it's not that I can't or that I won't.
He wants to get them wet. He wants to dry them. Keep you busy.
Yeah. I could lick them all and then, you know, have to wash them and he could dry them. Yeah.
Can't we all just get along?
But, you know, everybody's good at different things. Everybody, you know, there's things that people don't mind doing and maybe people don't particularly care to do. And so it's all about that partnership thing, you know. It's just out of love and respect for that other person. You're like, oh, you know, give them a little bit of slack and say, hey, you know, I know you don't really like that or you're busy or you're tired. So I'm going to pick up that slack for you today.
It's a 50-50 episode there. You have to learn to listen.
And if I do all them wonderful things, which I don't do so well, she puts up with my junkyard.
See, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not exactly sure what possessed Beverly to tolerate me all these years, but I'm glad she did.
Well, I'm glad she did.
Well, I see he has a very good heart, you know. He has wonderful intentions, and he loves me, and he takes care of me, and supports me, and, you know, it's a mutual thing, and, you know, it's a mutual give and take thing. You know, I know that his lab work out here is important, and his YouTube and his other projects and hobbies are important to him, and I know that they're time-consuming, but if he can give me a couple of hours in the evening just totally for me, just sit down on the couch with me and watch some television and snuggle up and hold me, my world's great.
Yeah, we just got to find that balance there.
Yeah, you get that question, no matter who you are, what am I doing it all for? You don't work just so you can have something to eat and go home. No. That's kind of meaningless, man. I mean, when you get up to bed, I mean, she's always hot. I'm always cold.
That's us.
Everything we're a counterpart on, you know. Uh-huh. I call it my heater, and she said, oh, get over here. Put your feet right on my back. Are you sure?
Yeah. I don't want no cold feet on my back.
Sometimes I put my cold hands on his back, though. He just wiggles and wiggles. I can't understand that at all.
Yeah, I can't understand how you can take so much joy in it.
Seriously, you have to ask yourself that question with me?
Yeah, I get hurt. My wife laughs. She laughs hard. She thinks it's the funniest thing.
Yeah, I laugh first, and then I'm like, oh, you all right down there?
She came in 10 minutes to the end of my show this morning. She came out of the bathroom, and she said, ow, oh, 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 oh. I said, what? I said, my little, my pity toe. I said, I bust up laughing. And I looked at, oh yeah, doggone, she like tore that little toenail, man.
Ow!
Oh, baby, come here. We gotta sanitize that. Took my alcohol, which has a pinhole on the top, squirted that little toe, and it was like her eyes lit up. Oh, she was so beautiful. Them caterpillars raised up almost 2 inches from their normal spot.
Aww.
And it, yeah, loved it. I rubbed her feet. She was all good. So
Shazin has arthritis in his hands awful bunch, you know, and I'd love to get more back massages than I do, but he has arthritis real bad, and I understand why he can't do that. But, you know, if he can just take the palm of his hand and just rub a little bit, I'm just like, oh, yeah, a little to the left.
I used to have real bad arthritis in my legs, knees. Not so much in my hip, but my left ankle was pretty bad. I mean, 5 years old, man, I'd wake up in the middle of the night, man, my legs just hurt. Mm. My knees. My mom come bring me a couple of Excedrin. I chew them up and swallow them down because I kind of got off on the taste of Excedrin.
And
my mom would run her fingers through my hair, and I'd pass out and all that stuff. But I did find out a cool thing. For the hands, mainly, and the knees.
Yeah.
WD-40 displaces moisture.
Wow.
And it will knock the swelling down, make your hands feel real good. People laugh, they say, oh, you're lubing the joints. Yeah, it's penetrating oil. It's going to penetrate. Well, it does.
That's a good thing.
It takes away a lot of the moisture.
That's a good thing. The other morning, Shaziz was mouthing off to me. Imagine that. And he was talking about his man powers. We talk about man and woman powers a lot around our house, you know, and I'm constantly like, where, you know, are you blowing them up in your thumb or what? And so anyway, he went into the bathroom, and our house is kind of chilly at the moment, so I have like a little blanket over one door there to keep it a little bit warmer in the kitchen and such. And he came back through that little... blanket area, and he thought I was still sitting on the couch reclining.
Keep in mind, I'm still mouthing off.
And he's still mouthing off, and he comes out around that blanket, and I went, boo! And I kid you not, he screamed like a girl, and he wrapped himself up in that blanket. And it was the funniest thing. And I'm like, hey, there's those woman powers for you.
Even I thought it was funny. I mean, I was screaming like a little girl.
He did. It was high-pitched and everything. It was priceless.
Here I am mouthing off, and I'm thinking she's still on the couch. And I come around there, and she's just right there, man.
You thought you had a monster on your back, huh?
You talk about getting caught off guard, man. I'll tell you what.
I laughed about that all day, I think, you know, because he had that high-pitched little scream like a girl.
So it was priceless. I laughed for probably hours afterwards.
What'd you say, Muddy?
When I come down, I'm going to get the camera rolling. I'm going to sneak up behind him and goose him.
I do that all the time. That's just fun.
That sounds about as valuable as when he's burning up his pop boat didn't get no video.
I know, right? I didn't know whether to cry or laugh for him.
Yeah. She's trying to do a radio show. I'm trying to burn down the lab. Yeah.
It's exciting around here.
Yeah, but you should have been there whenever that whole episode she just talked about. I'll tell you what, you laughed your, you know what, off, because I couldn't help but laugh. It was just so crazy. I mean, I'm mouthing off thinking she's on the couch, come around the corner, open up the curtain, and there she is, boo, and I'm like, I mean, she's standing right there, and I was like, ah!
Yeah, me and my wife and Kenny and his wife, Tanya, we went out to graveyards at night with cameras looking for spheres and orbs and all sorts of cool stuff, you know, so we was walking around out there, and oh, we had a blast scaring the girls. They didn't want to talk to us on the way home.
I bet not.
They got to talking to each other. That was fun.
One Halloween, we had the girls when our kids were still at home. We had a Halloween party at our house, and we have a graveyard that's just right up the hill from us, from our house. And Shaziz decided that he was going to wait till the kids got up there and they were going to go into the graveyard and tell ghost stories and all kinds of stuff. And so my husband and a friend of ours waited until all the kids got up there in the graveyard, and then they snuck up behind them and they turned on the weed eater and was revving it and chasing them around and stuff. Man, you never seen them kids roll up out of that graveyard so fast in your life.
Yeah, it was something like that scene that you see on The Simpsons where everybody's going in different directions and some people just stood there and froze. And
some of them mowed each other down.
I'm laughing so hard I'm about to throw up. I can't breathe because... I was laughing so hard. They're all running in different directions. It's like a scene out of the Chainsaw Massacre in a crowd or something like that. You know, they were freaking out. Ah!
They were like little ants rolling down the hill, man.
It was a hoot, man. Well, anyway, the time's slipping away there. We're getting down to like the last 9 minutes of the show. You got any advice for people out there for Valentine's Day or what Beverly talked about on her show?
Give her a squeeze, Bubba. Give her a squeeze. Let her know you love her.
Yeah, that's always a good thing.
Even if you can't do that, at least say something, you know? I mean, pick on her. Make them caterpillar eyebrows move around.
That's what it's all about, you know? One day you're funning with somebody, and, you know, and at the same time, you know, like I said earlier in my show, take your hubby a cup of coffee or come up behind your wife and give her a hug and... just whisper, I love you. You know, it's just that back and forth kind of thing.
Yeah, and flowers.
Yes.
Flowers. Not just flowers. Not just any flowers. Her favorite flowers. Have them delivered to her workplace. Even if you got to get a friend, you know, or just someone out there, hey, give me $5 to go deliver these to that lady over there. At her job.
Yeah.
Women like that because they look around and say, yeah, that's right. He's mine. He's mine.
I know,
and
right?
Come home and they will treat you just the same.
But you know, I love those hand-picked flowers just as much. I'm not picky. You know, I've always told Shaziz that he don't even have to spend money on me. You know, if he just takes a moment out of his day to write me a love letter or make me a little handmade card or go down into our field and pick me a handful of flowers, that means more to me than all the money you could spend in the world, because I know that he took a moment out of his time, out of his day, to think about me and do that.
Yeah, well, one time I went and picked my mom a whole bunch of dandelions and put them in a vase for her. And I don't know how I missed it, but those doggone dandelions were crawling with ants.
I'm glad I missed that one.
We used to do that for mom. We'd go out and pick a whole bunch of wildflowers and bring them home. But sometimes she'd cry, but we always knew. Once in a while we'd do that. And there were these cool things that we used to call them parachutes, but they're these kind of flat-top deals. They're all white with little bunches of, like millions of little white petals. And they, you know, they kind of fan out to where they look kind of like a parachute at the top. And... well, we used to clip those off, and you'd put a drop of food coloring in the bottom of the vase. You'd stick one in that one. Then you put a drop of food coloring of a different color in the other one. You'd get red, white, leave one white, just use the red and blue, get red, white, and blue, or whatever you want. Mix the colors. You get her favorite color anytime.
That's cool.
If it starts to get too dark, you take it out, and you put it back in the regular water. They're just weeds.
Yeah, that's really cool.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Mama loved those things. I ain't found many of those here in Texas.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what it is you're talking about. I don't think we have them up here in Missouri.
I'll get a picture of them and send them to you.
Well,
we used to call them parachutes. I have no idea what they really call them.
Well, it is about time for me to wrap it up, Muddy Moon Man, and I'm so happy that you joined me today and Shaziz, and that you spoke with us, joined our message about love and happiness and relationships and advice and all that good stuff. I'm so happy you could join us. It's always a pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
Peace and love, brother.
All right. Keep smiling. Have a ball. God bless. Many good things to you and yours.
God bless you too, honey. Okay, so it's time to wrap things up here on the Hope Show. I hope all of you have enjoyed today's message. I want to thank all of you for joining me as an audience and as guest speakers as well. I want to thank my husband Shaziz for always coming on the last 30 minutes and joining me. It's kind of a tradition for us, and I like that. I think it's about family and tradition and things like that, so I like having him here with me. Happy early Valentine's Day to all of you, and a big shout out. I love each and every one of you, and may God bless each and every one of you and yours as well. And now I want to play a couple of songs. I'm going to try to play that song that I tried to play before the break, and then I'm going to play...
Easy.
No, not that one.
That was
I don't know what's going on with those two. But anyway...
She hit the wrong button.
Well, then you must have, too, because another one come up.
Yeah.
I think he set you up.
I think he did, too.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm going to try to play that song and then play another special song for my husband and I. It's our wedding song, and I know you guys have heard it a million times before, but it's The Power of Love by Celine Dion, and I think it's a wonderful song to play today for an early Valentine's Day. And
Shower the People with Love.
Yes.
Taylor is awesome on it. I love.
And I just want to tell my husband right here and now on Worldwide Radio that I love you very, very much, Shaziz. And it just keeps getting stronger and stronger with every year we're together. And happy Valentine's Day. Kiss, kiss. Mm-hmm. Is there any last minute thing you want to say before I play those two songs?
Just know, lady, that you're the center of my universe, and I'm going to push the button so that I can get the blame for Molly Hatchet flirting with disaster coming up.
Okay, so grab your partner, grab your man, grab your lady, plant a big old smooch on him or her while this song is playing, do a little twirl around the room. Until next Saturday, same time, same place, God bless each and every one of you until we meet again.
All right.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Here comes the tune.
Cashing in my bad luck. Some nights I call it a draw. Some nights I wish that my lips could build a castle. Some nights I wish they'd just fall off. But I still wake up, I still see a ghost. But Lord, I'm still not sure what I stand for. What do I stand for? What do I stand for? Most nights I don't know.
About that, folks, for some reason Sam decided to play whatever it chose, so we're on to the next song. Higher Love.
But this is the right one.
Yeah.
As I look in your eyes, I hold on to your body and feel it's you. This is warm and tender, love that I could that I'll answer when I'm with you. Even though there may be times it seems I'm far. Yeah.